Hi, I'm Bella Gandhi, founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host of this beautiful podcast. We're here to bring more love into your life, regardless of if you're single, if you're married, if you're thinking about becoming single, if you're thinking about becoming married or finding the lid to your pot. And we're going to bring more life into that love that you have or you want. You might have seen me on Good Morning America or Steve Harvey or the Today Show or 100 other places, but I'm so happy that you are here with us because we're going to make your life and your love better. Smart daters, welcome back to this week's episode. I'm so excited to have someone today who's not just a friend of mine, but an expert in negotiating. Her name is Kristen Prince. We met many years ago. She is a top employment attorney in Chicago, total badass, has the Prince Law Firm, and is a newly minted author, although she's got an extensive writing background, of a book called The New Rules of Negotiation, Get What Matters. So I couldn't think of a better person to bring on the podcast to help us think about how we negotiate. What does negotiating mean? And how do we get to better spaces in all of our relationships? So Kristen, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. This is going to be so much fun. You know, I always have fun hanging out with you, so I'm sure we're going to have a good time.
I love that. And I love, just for those of you that are listening and you are not watching the video, Kristen has a poster behind her that says wants and needs. And what do we talk about at Smart Dating Academy? What do you need to be happy versus what you think you want to be happy? So I love that we're already starting out on like good vibrational footing.
Isn't that what negotiation is about too? Like, what do you really need and what do you want? Although the artist of this piece told me that she thinks if she wants it, she needs it. So
sounds like my daughter. Well, good. Well, Kristen, tell us a little bit about your story and your background, and then let's just dive in.
Well, thank you. So I am an attorney, as you said. I'm also a mother of two daughters who are 10 and 12 and a wife. I've been married for 23 years. It'll be this year. I've actually been with my husband, though, for 30 years, which
amazing.
Is crazy. And I just feel like I have a great life. I'm extremely grateful for my life. And a lot of what inspired me to write the book was the fact that I work with so many successful executives and business owners who I think are amazing negotiators at work. But when it comes to themselves, they're not quite as strong in terms of figuring out like what matters to them? What's really important? I think so much our lives is spent, so many times we spend our lives thinking, what do other people think should be important to us? And that clouds our vision. So hopefully my book helps people get some clarity about that and then use tools that they already have. Use the things that, because we all actually are negotiating constantly. I mean, most of us wake up negotiating even with ourselves, like, should I go work out today? Right.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, tell us everything we need to know to be better. How do we negotiate with ourselves? Is there like a formula or a process? And then how does that make us better at negotiating everywhere in our life? And I love that you said that you work with so many executives that know how to negotiate through a task or a project at work. And is that because somebody has defined what the end goal is? Or why are we so good at that versus the personal stuff?
Oh, so many. Okay. I like to think of myself as an armchair psychologist here. And for me, I think a lot of it comes from at work. You know, we identify with that. It's, you're doing this for somebody else. So it feels like less selfish, less Yeah, like less greedy. People use that word sometimes with me and ask me, is this too greedy? Where when you're doing something on behalf of your work or even on behalf of your family, there is a feeling of empowerment that you're an advocate. You know, even in my job, I know I feel great advocating for my clients because I can be a little bit of a hero there where I'm saving them and I'm helping them. Or whereas when you're doing something for yourself, you know, we all grow up with like different stories about what it means to ask for too much. You know, are you asking for too many presents? Are you being overly competitive? And all of those judgments that we have growing up, I think, come with us into our adulthoods. And we need to kind of separate. Well, do you deserve to have a great life? I think we all deserve to have a great life. And
Amen.
we all have different definitions of what that is, right? So getting okay with, yeah, it's fine to have, not fine. I deserve it. I deserve to have the most amazing life I can possibly live. And for some people, that means being completely money focused. And if you're my client and that's what your focus is, I'm all in for you on that. But for a lot of people, it's more, what kind of impact am I having? What relationships am I building? So getting clarity and actually being okay with what's truly important for you. Who cares if somebody else doesn't have that same value? What's your value? What do you want? What's most important to you? And let's go from there, right?
Yeah, I love that. And one of the things I talk about, there's a lot of research around ultimately what makes for that happy, amazing life, and a lot of excellent research. You know, the Harvard Grant Study, which is the longest longitudinal study ever done on 238 men that were in Harvard, and then also, you know, a lot of inner city young men as well concurrently. But you know, one of the people in that study was JFK, right? Some became presidents, some didn't. But ultimately, when they looked at these men, what actually made them happy long term was the quality of their relationships with others.
Yes, I think that's true. So personally, for me, I'm very relational, and that is important. But I don't assume that that's true for everybody. You know, this is a little bit of a tangent, but I was just thinking about this because you're saying that about the self-judgment and the things that people end up getting focused on in their lives. A good friend of mine, she just got married last year for the first time, and she's in her 50s. And I think about the kind of internal negotiation she had to go through to get there, because she ended up marrying a guy who is like a blue collar, hardworking, incredibly intelligent person. But she had spent her whole life thinking, no, she would only date someone who was at like kind of the same white collar professional level that she was. Whereas this guy, incredibly successful in his career, incredibly smart and, you know, very cultured, has very interesting background. And she never would have dated this person until she kind of got over that internal negotiation of, what do I really want in my life? Do I want a real relationship, or is this about, you know, some sort of status thing or what other people might think? Those are the things that we really need to get over to just have a great life. I don't, you know.
Yeah, and ultimately, it sounds like what you or what she got to is what I really, you know, I've spent, you know, 30 years being single and dating people for what I thought I wanted, which is somebody who's as high octane as me, who makes more money than me, has a bigger job than me, right? And sometimes successful women get caught in that trap of, I want more than me. And ultimately, what it sounds like she ended up with is what I actually need is someone lovely who is going to love and adore me. And that is what I
Yes.
need. Right. And she didn't settle. Sometimes we settle for the trappings of the big house and the big life and the nice cars and the this and the that because, you know, there's a little Disney princess sometimes inside of us. It's like, okay, here's Prince Charming who's here and he's going to sweep me off my feet. And ultimately, when we're looking at just the things we think we want, we haven't really sat down to look at what we actually need to be happy.
It's so true. That is. And that's actually, I think the like through thread of my book and what I was trying to communicate and really just say that we all have that power. And we also, we have the power to create whatever life that we want. And so much of it comes from, understanding, like I said, what's truly important. So that's, I start from that premise and spend a lot of time talking about that and how that's played out in my life, how that's played out for specific clients. Recently, even this isn't in the book, but I recently, like in the past year or two, had a situation where a client, we were having a dispute with their former employer. Their former employer owed them a lot of money. I mean, because I helped them negotiate their deal on the front end, the employer owed a lot of money on the back end. And ultimately, it was like pretty black and white. Like if we actually litigated it, the client would have gotten that and more. But ultimately, this person decided to leave something on the table intentionally. And I was telling an associate about this, and the associate was like, "Well, why would this client do that? This is so black and
Cut and
white."
dry. Yeah.
I said, "Because this client like knows what's important to them, and this client knows that they don't want to be in this dispute. They want to. They know that this is still a good deal. It was still a very good deal, still a good deal, and they want to go on and focus on their life and have the best life they possibly can. They don't want to be fighting over this last, little bit just to say that they want it. The deal wasn't actually that important to them." And to me, I think that's the best thing that you can do. Now, if the person said like that was the most important, I also am, like I said, I'm fully supportive because I have no problem going after every single penny that somebody is due, but I also want to make sure that it's because that's what's important to them. I think that that's key.
I love that. And you talk about, and maybe this is the right, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, the right sequence to think about things. You're talking about knowing what you want. Like, we all deserve to have a great life. And what does a great life look like for us? And how do values play into that? Like, how do we, so many of us have played the good girl forever, right? It's like, have goal, get goal. Okay, I'm going to become a lawyer. I'm going to become a dating coach. I'm going to do this. I'm going to climb the ladder. But when you sit back and go, oh my God, who am I? And what do I really want? And what do I really value? Sometimes people are more confused than one would think.
Yeah, it's sad, and I think most people don't admit this, but most of us are going through our lives primarily unconscious.
Yeah.
And the research shows that I also am a big fan of, and I use a lot of it for my book, like behavioral economists, and how they say, you have two parts of your brain. One part is this analytical that's really thinking through, which we all tell ourselves we're using all the time. But the majority of the time, we're actually using that default unconscious going through the motions. And I think because we have so many things like just pulling us, distracting us, trying to get our attention constantly, a lot of times we're not spending enough attention on getting clarity about what's really important to me and what do I want to see. And I know it sounds simple, but I think if you can write that out, if you can really visualize what kind of life that you want or what kind of outcome you want, and you can write it out in detail, then you start reading it back and thinking, is this really what's most important to me? Is this the life I want? You There's something kind of magical about putting pen to paper
Yes.
and reading it back and thinking, is this me? I know it sounds like, oh no, that seems so simple, but simple is not easy. Simple is
Simple
very
is not
hard.
easy. Simple is not easy. And, my mentor works with me to create what we call a big picture vision for 3 years from now. And not just for your business and Smart Dating Academy, but what does your life look like overall? What does your perfect life look like? Because if you can't envision it, right, then you can't get it.
It's true. Actually, Debbie Millman is a professor at NYU, and she teaches a class. She's actually a famous designer, but she teaches a class where she has the students write out in detail the most audacious life that they can see for themselves in 5 to 10 years. And she says, get as like granular as you can, like talk about the feeling of the carpet under your feet, the view out the window, where are you going to work? What are you doing? Get as detailed as possible. And all of these people say that when they've done this, it's all happened. Now, it doesn't all happen in the exact same way. And she even came back and did a, I listened to her on a couple podcasts, and she came back and did a second one where she said, people ask me, well, what if I don't have just one vision? She's like, you write out multiple because your life is not, it's not stagnant. It's not like this is that one period and that's it. So she says, you can write out hundreds of these and all of them can happen. They can all happen. They might not all happen in the exact way, but they will happen in a way that you will say, yes, I planned this. I visualized this and I made it happen.
And I think you said the right thing. It's like I visualized it and I made it happen, right? I think things like The Secret make people think, well, if I'm going to envision a Lamborghini, it's just going to appear in my driveway. No, that's not going to happen. You have to be super clear, right? I always say success is a system anywhere in life. And first, if you can envision it, great. Then you're going to have to take inspired action in order to get there on a daily basis in service of that vision. So I think getting really clear, dear listener, on your most audacious life, be it 3 years, Bella style, or 10 years, according to Debbie Millman. I love that. Picture the carpet under your feet. Picture your soulmate. Picture how you feel when you're with this person. What is your dream life look like? Okay, so now that we know how to do that, how do we get into the next step of negotiating our lives?
Well, again, once you plan that out and you write it out, I think this goes to exactly what you're saying, where it's systemized. I like to plan out, okay, well, what steps am I going to take and what's going to be the response? Because in any negotiation, even in our own heads, there's actually a lot of other players and influencers. So in the book, I talk about delving into who else is involved in the negotiation. So if your negotiation is about, oh, I want to, find my partner in life. Well, who else is going to be involved? Your family is going to be involved in that if you are connected with your family, or your friends will be involved in that too. So thinking like, what are the motivations driving everybody? Thinking through all of that. I'm applying this to relationships, but in the book, I apply it more to, high stakes negotiations about your work. Or even there's, I have a story about negotiating with your spouse and
Oh, tell
thinking
me the
through.
story.
I have this whole theory about with a spouse, and this is not just my theory. I've read about this a lot and also just seen it in play, that in negotiations with your spouse, you really want to start with gratitude, because if you have a good relationship, and this is true in a friendship too, you want to start by showing appreciation for who the person is and what they do. A lot of times when we're rushing through life, we're focused on the lacking. Oh, you didn't take out the garbage, or you didn't do the laundry, or you didn't clean up this mess, whatever it is. It's very easy to get focused on what's not being done. So in a negotiation with a partner, I think you always want to start by reframing in your mind, like, what is this person doing? Why isn't that thing getting done? And how can I present it more from this place of how much I appreciate when this does get done? How much I appreciate the fact that you're dropping our daughters off at school every day and you're picking them up every day. And I know that you're doing all this, and it would so help me this week if you also did XYZ. It's really framing. That's what negotiation is. It's thinking not just how things will impact you, but how things will impact the person with whom you're negotiating. Now, I also want to say I do address this a little bit in the book, that that's in relational negotiation. And you said this, most negotiations in our lives should be relational, right?
And even when you're negotiating with a client, like if you have a client and you're negotiating with their former employer or current employer or whatever it is, it's ultimately, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong when saying this, sometimes we tend to think of things as win, lose, zero, one. It's a binary play. I win, you lose. But if you think about it relationally, even when it's contentious, right? It's like, okay, what is this other, what are they feeling?
Yes. Yeah. What are they feeling? Why are they taking this position? I mean, so much of my book is about the planning before a negotiation, and that is thinking, what is the other person thinking? What's most important to them? What's going on? Not just what's going on in their lives? Are they having struggles right now? Are things good for them? Like, you wouldn't go to your boss when the company just lost a huge deal and is struggling to cover payroll and say,
I
I need
need
a
a raise.
raise. That's not good timing, right? So it's thinking about everything from the point of view of the other person. You actually will get so much more if you take the time to plan out and consider the other person involved. I use the in the book, I talk about how every negotiation class, every negotiation article pretty much I've read talks about BATNA, the best alternative to a negotiated agreement. And I'm like, that's great. You should always think about what's your BATNA, what's going to happen if this doesn't work out, like if this relationship doesn't work out, what's going to happen? What's my life going to look like? But also thinking about what's their best alternative? What's driving them? What's going to happen if they don't get to a deal? Like, how is that going to, and that can change so much of how you will engage with somebody if you understand what their potential loss is or what their potential gain is, right?
Go back to that. I've never heard that term, BATNA, best alternative to a negotiated agreement. Did I get
Yes.
that right?
Yes, that is correct.
And
That's
what
not
does that
mine,
mean?
but I
Right.
talk about it in the book.
And
That
that means what?
means if you're going into a negotiation, you should be very aware of what's the outcome that's going to happen to you if you don't reach an agreement. So, you could apply it easily to dating. So if we go on a date and it doesn't work out, the outcome is I'm still going to be single and you're still going to be single. Or in a employment transaction, if I come in and I say, I need $10 million to take this job, and you say no, then I need to know going in that my best alternative is I'm not going to have the job, and maybe I'm okay with that. So you need to be okay with what your best alternative, but then also thinking, what happens to that person? What's driving them here? And like, are they, for me, a lot of times I'm negotiating with another attorney. So is their client going to be mad at them because they didn't get a deal? Is there, I mean, I'm sure you could apply it in dating. Is their family going to be disappointed in them if this one didn't work out? Who's influencing that, and what's their best alternative? So I think planning should always start with the other side. We spend so much time thinking about our opinion and how this is impacting us and what we think about a situation. And the fact is, everybody's doing that. Everybody's like in their own, what's the saying? We're all the stars of the movie playing in our own head.
Constantly, 24/7.
Yes, but taking some time to get out of that movie and maybe thinking a little bit about the movie playing in the other in everybody else's head. Like what do they see? What's driving them? What's going on for them?
I couldn't agree with you more. I think, and if we come back to the dating context for a second, what I recommend people do, number one, it's know what you need versus what you want, right? You have to know the red flags. You have to have a process and a plan. And that's obviously what we do at Smart Dating Academy, put ration to something that seems irrational and unprocessed, right? So now you have a process and you know who you are. You know what kind of a partner is going to make you happy. You know all of the things. Okay, great. Now, when you walk into the date, okay, you already have that inculcated inside of you. Now, what you want to do is think about, okay, what is the person that's going to sit across from me? What do they want to do? I'm like, if you can tell yourself, this other person wants to feel good in my presence, that's it.
Yes.
That's it. You're not worried about settling. You're not worried about, well, it's not my job to entertain them. You're just saying, it's, you know what? From this date, my purpose is obviously to use the system that I know to look at red flags, green flags, but also to bring out the best in this person who's also slogging it out on the apps or in the dating world. How can I leave this person a little bit better?
I love that.
And when you walk in with, right, the quote unquote other focus versus self focus, you just have more fun because now you've had a purpose, right? The purpose isn't, oh my gosh, if this doesn't work out, I don't know, my family's gonna be mad at me, I'm gonna be mad at me, I'm gonna feel rejected, I'm gonna feel like a loser, all those bad movies that play. But if you just say, my goal is to elevate this person who I'm gonna be on a date with for 90 minutes, and come what may, that's it, that's
Yes.
your purpose. Suddenly, the date becomes more fun. You become more magnetic.
Yes, that's true. You do. There's something natural. And also, you become more comfortable because when, think about this, those times when you're in your own head the whole time and you're like, am I wearing the right thing? Oh, what did I just say? Did I say the right thing? Those times when you're thinking about yourself are the least comfortable times. The times when you're like very externally focused, experiencing the person who's across the table from you and having that conversation, those are the greatest. Yeah, those are the times when you're like, yeah, this was fun. I actually had fun. I feel like people just underestimate how important all of that can be in having a great life, you know?
100%. It's like, well, I want to have fun. I'm like, well, your job is to bring the fun and to be the fun because you're the only one that can experience the fun. Someone else can't make you have fun. But if you're focused on the other person and elevating them, that will be reflected to you. And automatically, the date, the interaction will be more fun. And this isn't, dear listener, just for a date. Sometimes when we get into our 30s, 40s, and 50s, and we're transplanted into new cities, or we leave a job and we have to make new connections, this is relevant for making new friends.
Yes, it's true. I mean, it's the stuff that you learn when you're a kid that it's so much more important to be interested than interesting. You're not there to put on a show for anybody. And I think maybe people misunderstand when we're saying, oh, no, you're there to make somebody else also have a good time. That doesn't mean you're there to put on a show for them or pretend
Yeah.
you're somebody else. It means show that you're interested in them, right? Ask them some questions.
Yeah. And really, one of the things, at least for dating, and even if you're looking for new friends, or it's like, think about questions that you can ask this person to get them to talk about what they're excited about, what they're passionate about, what they're proud of, right? Versus sticking to the gloom and the doom of the world around us right now, right? It's like, what, instead of saying, how are you? It's like, what is exciting right now? Tell me something good that's happening. You automatically help that person to look at what's good in their life, which automatically makes them feel better because you're not like, oh, how's that awful thing? You know, it's like,
Yes.
okay,
Oh, have you
granted.
read the news? Oh, this is horrible.
Totally, right? It's like what's exciting in your life. So I think that this is such a great conversation. And what do you know, tell me if I want to make sure I'm getting the best kind of information and the things you want our listeners to know. What else do you think we should be thinking about with regards to negotiations?
Okay, this is kind of almost just a coincidence that you brought this up about what type of questions are you asking. I have a big section of the book on asking questions because questions control the conversation. And I think the example you gave is perfectly right on about that. When you're asking somebody else questions, you're getting information, but you're leading the direction of the conversation. People just mistakenly seem to believe that because they're talking, they're controlling the conversation. And no. Asking questions is how you control the conversation. In fact, a lot of times in negotiation, I say when the other side asks you a question, ask a question back. Like if that question is leading you off the path that you want to be on, it's okay to respond with a question. It is okay to say, well, what would you think about that? Or how would you respond if you were me? Right?
100%. I
And
love that.
I think that's great with dating too. We spend so much time thinking about what we're going to say and not enough time thinking about what am I going to ask? And where do I want that to lead me? Do I want it to lead to us having fun? Then I'm probably not going to ask, what do you think about the political or geopolitics right now? That's probably not the best question to ask if you want to be having fun. If you have a different goal, maybe go for it. If you want to get to the best deal possible, maybe you'll be asking what's motivating them, what options did they see on the table? Those types of questions where you're getting information and kind of leading people down a path without pushing them, without putting it in their face, like, this is where I want you to go.
No, that's so true. I mean, they, you know, and this isn't my quote, but it's like the quality of your questions determines the quality of your life.
Yes, that's so true. That is.
Right? And I love, I mean, and we're talking about asking yourself the right questions, first of all. What does a big, amazing, audacious, juicy life look like for me? And when you're in every interaction that you walk into, maybe, you know, I think, and I'm trying to become better at this. I haven't been great at this at certain points in my life. You know, I tend to be like the good one, the pleaser, like I'm going to get the task done. I'm going to do what you want me to do. But really thinking about what is the outcome that I want from this interaction?
Oh, you're like basically giving away a lot in the book too. A lot of what I talk about also is keeping the end in mind. Like once you get that whole idea about the values and what your life looks back like, work backwards. If you're going on a trip and you're saying, I'm gonna drive to Florida tomorrow, you're working from there. Like, how do I get to Florida? Let's look from there and go backwards. So if I want this life, this promotion, this relationship, what does that look like? And thinking about all the steps that preceded it to get there. It's not just like, oh, which I mean, honestly, I probably make the mistake of this too. I'm horrible at like step by step by step. I'm like, oh, I want to go to Z. So I'm just
Go.
going to jump there. Yeah, exactly. But it is a lot more effective when you can say, this is the destination or this is the goal I want to achieve. And then think, well, what are all the steps that go into that? Because people also look at all that somebody else's life and they're like, oh, they have this amazing life, and they fail to see all of the steps that it took along the way and kind of the sacrifices and the judgments. The most important thing to me is, like, in every relationship, you should try to have shared values, right? Any big relationship in your life, your employer, your spouse, your children, your parents, all of that shared value. So I say don't sacrifice that, but there's a lot of other sacrifices that need to be made if your relationships are important to you.
100%. And I think the biggest, one of the biggest sacrifices, I think to your point, is sometimes we have to sacrifice the right, the desire to be right.
That's so funny because I just did the TikTok on, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? You know, that's a very well-known quote. And, you know, if you're somebody who says, I'm only happy if I'm right, well, that's great.
You're going to
You're
live a life of one.
yeah, exactly. So getting clarity on that, do you want to, most things are not that important, you know?
No. And you have to pick your values. Do you know, this is kind of a, you know, maybe an obvious question. When you sit down and when people say, identify your values, do you have something about that in the book? Like, how do people think about God? What do I value? Like, sometimes you can be 35, 45, 55, sitting to like, shit, I don't know what I value. Like, what do I value?
So there's a lot of different tests for it. I do actually recommend, there is a book called, oh shoot, this is my middle age where I'm forgetting, and it's
The
even referenced in
menopause
my
blog.
book. Yeah, exactly. Oh, Susie Welch's book. She has a great test that people can take that just says, like, am I living my values? It says, you test and it tells you what are your values, and then you can test and say, am I living in line with my values? And she defined 15 values. There's some tests out there that I found where they have hundreds of different values. I like hers because it's very distinct, 15 values, and they are about things like, you know, what size impact is important to you. Like, for me, having a big impact on others is a real value for me. Having my family is a big value for me, but it's not the primary value. Having a beautiful life too. Like, some people, they really value being in you know, a setting where aesthetics are very important to them. And what I love about her whole concept is that it's non-judgmental. She's just saying, you know what? These are things that are important to you. And instead of thinking, oh, other people might judge that or might think that's not as important, just own it. If having the biggest career that's like, you know, you can't be a movie star and say it's not a value to have fame. I mean, that can be a value and that's okay. That's good. I mean, that's you. So just owning it, what's important to you?
Right,
Because it,
significance and impact, right? That
yes.
fame kind of is a lit. And I'm with you about those tests where there's like 100 different values. They're like, but this is related to this and this is related to this. So, right, what is fame ultimately? It's significance and being known.
Yes. So, and if you are somebody who wants that, but you meet somebody who you know, maybe you like, maybe you're attracted to them, but they don't want that. They want to stay home all the time. Their idea of the perfect date is to sit on the couch. That person's not for you. That's okay, right? But if you're not clear on your values and you're like, oh, well, you know, maybe that is okay and I could sacrifice that, I think you're going to end up really miserable. It's very hard to live a great life and not be in alignment with your own values.
No, for sure. And then picking a partner that is aligned with those values. And I think for those of you that are out there dating, values are different than interests.
Yes. Oh, yeah,
Okay.
that's
And so just because you love pickleball and the
true.
person that you might be on a date with is not athletic and hasn't picked up a pickleball racket, what you want in that person, and I'm going to put words in your mouth, is the interest to grow and change as a
Yes.
fundamental mindset. Like, okay, I may not know how to play pickleball, but I would try a few lessons and see if I was actually good at it. Great. Okay. And that's how you look at things. If somebody is just a zero or a one, like, no, I don't want to learn how to do that because it's just not something I'm interested in. Okay. That trait is probably going to be evident in other aspects of this person's life, right? So I think that don't confuse interests with values.
That's true. Okay, now you're actually making me even rethink this a little bit because my husband would prefer to sit on the couch a lot of nights, whereas
Ditto.
I would prefer to be out and social. But also, it is a value for him to also have like a full life, and so he will let me push him to get off the couch and go do things too. So I'm not saying just because somebody prefers to be a homebody does not mean that you should completely cross them off the list. But if they never want to do, if they're not open to doing something and you're an open person, that's hard. It's hard to switch that.
I think we're married to the same person. I mean, my husband can totally play the best social person on TV, but then if I have an event tonight and he's like, "Oh my God, amazing." I know he's going to watch some action movie by himself and be super happy on the couch,
Yeah,
right?
we
And
are married to the same person. That
right,
sounds.
but can be completely fine, and they're fine with the fact that they're married to these women that want to be out there and are extroverted. And I think I've told you this before, I'm always in awe of you and all of the things you've accomplished with your work and building this amazing life and an amazing company with such a great reputation, and how much you give back to the community in Chicago. You're really a unicorn.
Oh, you're so funny. Well, I'm in awe of you too. I told you, I see you. I turn on the TV and you're constantly there.
I'm sorry.
It's amazing. I love it. And you're giving people such good advice. So keep doing it.
Oh, well, are there any last nuggets, Kristen, that I have not juiced out of you that you want to share with our listeners as your parting words?
No, I will definitely buy the book. It's on Amazon. It's not out yet until October, but buy the book. I will share a lot more. I do share a lot more stories there. And also, one thing I didn't say that lean into your strengths. That's kind of the, I would say, second half of the book is really saying it's okay. You don't have to be any particular person to negotiate and have the best possible life. You just need to be you. You need to own your own strengths and lean into those strengths.
Oh, I love that so much. So often we get caught in like the improvement, and I need to get better at these things that I suck at. But here it's like, okay, it's okay to work on those things, but really, understand what you're really good at and what comes easily to you, and do more of that.
Yes. Lean in, go all in on those things because they work for you because you know that you're good at them.
Oh, I love that. Well, I'm going to put the link to the pre-order, and smart daters, do me a favor, place the pre-order. It's such a huge, it's a huge thing and a great act to help my friend, because those pre-orders mean a lot. I have not yet written a book. I know it's, I said yet, and most people are like, oh my God, it's finally
You
on your
do. Yeah,
radar.
you do have to write a book. You do.
So potentially when I become an empty nester, maybe never, because Jaden is moving home this summer, as I was telling you. But yeah, so pre-order the book, and we would love to have you back on to do an episode two when the book launches.
Yes, I know. I feel like we have so much to talk about. I didn't even really get into the strengths yet, but I love you. Let's definitely do this again. Thank you, Bella.
Well, amazing. And smart daters, I hope that you have, thought a lot. We gave you a lot of nuggets to think about yourself. And I think some of the biggest struggles in our lives, and I can tell you in my life personally, are the struggles with yourself. And The self that wants to do the things and the self that's actually driving the bus, which kind of always lurks in, like Kristen alluded to, that subconscious mind that's driving the bus. So really sit down and journal out this weekend, what would my best life look like? And if you're single, hell, you better include, what would my love look like? And then if you need some help around dating, please go to smartdatingacademy.com. So many of you are like, I've listened to you for years. I'm like, okay, and you're still not doing anything. So take this action because you're worth it and you deserve it. So until our next episode, I bid you farewell and thank you again, Kristen.
Thank you, Bella. Oh, wait, I do have to say one last thing. I have met like three people who are married who all used you and credited you for helping them figure out their lives so that they could find their significant other. So she works, you guys. Definitely reach out. All
Oh my
right.
God, you're the best. What a great ending. I'm blushing. So thank you. All right, see you next week.
Bye, Bella.
Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.